Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Georgia. With me is Greg Velasquez in Iowa. We talk about U.S. men's soccer.
The U.S. men were defeated 1-0 in Panama City last night. It was a pretty brutal night of soccer for U.S. fans. Berhalter's 11 and 5 subs managed 0 shots on target and ended the game in pretty pathetic fashion, repeatedly lumping the ball forward to Walker Zimmerman, who was wandering around up front as the clock ticked down. Panama wasn't brilliant or anything, but they did deserve to win. Greg, how are you doing?
Bells, I'm just really hoping that we can spend a lot of time focusing on the non-soccer but soccer field antics of the end of the Panama game, because I feel like that was by far the most entertaining portion of that 97 minutes.
Yeah. I heard Max Kroos, I think I'm saying that correctly, on the First Touch Twitter Spaces last night talking about that, because he was at the game. And he said it was from a spectacle point of view, it was very entertaining, even if the soccer left a lot to be desired.
Like you said, the actual soccer was brutal. So at the very least, we had that bit of, I'm going to call it levity. I'm sure there was some frustration for people watching at the time who were, you know, desperate for the U.S. to score a goal. But as I'm sure you will say soon, there was no goal coming for the U.S. no matter how much time was going to be on that clock.
Zero goals. We could have gotten 24 hours of stoppage time. We wouldn't have gotten a goal.
But we might have had a 5v5 game breakout on the corner of the field near Matt Turner.
Yeah. That was funny. I wish the broadcast had shown more of it, honestly. We got to give the people what they want. All right. So should we do the lineups?
Let's get in the lineups, because I don't know if I'm ready to do big picture things at the moment.
Greg Berhalter started with Turner in goal, of course, and then a back line of Shaq Moore, Walker Zimmerman, Mark McKenzie, and George Bello. And then Kellen Acosta at the 6, Yunus Musah and Sebastian Legette as the 8s, Paul Arriola, Jazzy Zardes, and Tim Weah across the front line. Any surprises there for you?
I'm going to say no. Arriola actually surprised me a little bit, because he'd gone 90 minutes a few days before. This actually lined up very closely with my mapped out projected 11 for this Panama game. I think the only differences I had were, well, I actually had Arriola because I didn't expect him to play in the first game. I had Yedlin instead of Shaq Moore, and I had Weston McKennie instead of Yunus Musah, because I thought Musah would be rested, not ready to go back-to-back games. But this was what we'd mapped out before the window even started. So this isn't a lineup that I thought was going to, that I necessarily thought couldn't handle playing Panama. But it became apparent pretty early that it wasn't a lineup that was going to blow anybody's doors off.
Yeah, boy, that's an understatement. I mean, I have to admit too, that I wasn't like, the things that made me the most nervous about it were McKenzie, that left side of the defense, McKenzie and Bello. And, you know, I wouldn't say they covered themselves in glory on the night, but they weren't like the problem in this game, I don't think. And I was, you know, I was ready to see Acosta, Musah, and Legette as a midfield, but that midfield did not perform last night. And I'm very curious what your thoughts are on why that was. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about the Panama lineup. 9 of 11
Hold on,
starters.
Just because I want to really establish, did you have a problem when the lineup was announced with either the number of rotations or just the balance of it or anything else? Or did you think that on paper, sure, this lineup seems like it could be okay?
I thought this lineup could get like a Gold Cup type victory or a draw. I was okay. I think I was okay with the amount of rotation. I'm rethinking that now, but at the time the lineup was announced, I didn't have the wisdom to see that maybe we shouldn't have made 7 changes from our lineup a few days ago. What about you?
So I also thought the lineup was fine. And I know that people are a little bit upset about the number of changes, which again, I think it's totally fair to be critical of the selections and the changes. But I don't necessarily think that's a good argument to say that the changes cost us like chemistry. I just kind of wanted to point out that this is like you said, you compared it to a team that could get a result in the Gold Cup style. This was basically the Gold Cup roster, right? We had, I think, 8 of the 11 players here played significant minutes together in the Gold Cup, with Bello and Shaq Moore as the fullbacks. Walker Zimmerman played in the Gold Cup. Matt Turner played in the Gold Cup. Acosta and Legette were like playing almost every game in the Gold Cup. Zardes and Ariola. So this basically was a Gold Cup lineup that you just added in Tim Weah, Yunus Musa, and then Mark McKenzie, who's also had extended camps with a lot of these guys before he went over to Belgium. So, like, I don't buy the chemistry issues. It shouldn't be a chemistry issue where it's like, oh, they just, you know, got thrown together for the first time. Like, these guys should be able to play a recognizable game of soccer.
Yeah. Yeah. But they couldn't. They couldn't do it. And I don't know exactly why not. I mean, I think a lot of people had a bad performance yesterday. So Panama had Mejia in the goal, Michael Murillo, Escobar, Cummings, and Davis across the back line, Cristian Martinez and Anibal Godoy as the like double pivot sixes, and then Quintero, Barcenas, and Gondola, who I thought was actually quite good across that band of three in the 4-2-3-1, and then Rolando Blackburn as the striker. I noticed that Freddie Gondola was crying when the national anthem was played at the beginning of the game. I thought that was pretty cool, like the tears coming down his cheeks. And then he came out and played pretty well, gave Shaq Moore a lot of trouble.
And I actually don't know what his how many caps he has, how many World Cup qualifying games he has. This is his first start of this window. I can say that for sure, because Panama have only used, I think I have it as 15 different starters for all 5 of their World Cup qualifying games. They ran the same 11 out there for all 3 games of the first window, and then only made 2 changes between the first game of their first game of this window and the U.S. game. So they're basically doing the zero rotation approach, and they're just trying to ride their starting 11 as far as they can go.
Yeah, and they were all the sort of buzzwords about a CONCACAF opponent and an away qualifier. They were physical. They were they seemed like they were ready to play, and they faced an opponent that didn't seem like it was ready to play. So unless you will have any big picture thoughts now, let's go to the timeline.
I think most of mine will have some openings to discuss during the events of the match.
Okay. All right, well, in the third minute, we get a good attack up the middle from Acosta to Musa. So this is promising. You know, Acosta plays a pass straight up the gut to Musa, and Musa takes a nice deft touch with the inside of his foot to Ariola, who then dutifully swings it wide to Shaq Moore, whose ball to the middle isn't quite good enough, which I think was a theme on the night, like our service from wide. I know you're not a big pump in the crosses from the touchline guy, but even if you are going to, like, just imagine you are going to do that, the crosses needed to be better than they were tonight, and this was like one of the first example. It gets a little deflected, and then it spills to Ariola, and Ariola tries to have a shot, but he's just a step slow in like getting the shot off.
Probably no comment on that, but go on.
Maybe should have taken it on the volley, but anyway, his shot is blocked for a corner kick. The ensuing corner results in a decent header from Walker Zimmerman. So I'm thinking, okay, yeah, maybe we're going to come out and play a good game of soccer today.
Yeah, and I think what makes you think that, what I thought when I saw that was basically because of the Musa touch. Like the Musa touch there was like, oh, that was slick. And it got to Ariola, and Ariola's ball he didn't just swing it wide. Like he hit this, you know, like that good looking diagonal slide rule ball. He had a big window to hit it into for more on the overlap. But absolutely, and this is something I've kind of been hammering on since way back since the Switzerland friendly, is that we stop playing soccer so early in these patterns. Like we get the ball to Shaq Moore, and it's like, okay, now hit the ball into the box as hard as you can. And I just, for the life of me, cannot believe that is the best approach to trying to score goals in a game of soccer. Like, all right, now we're here, we've unbalanced them, And we almost immediately like surrender our advantage by just trying to smash the ball at the box and hoping good things happen. I feel like we have a talent advantage already and we've got ourselves into a very good spot. Continue playing soccer, continue pressing that advantage you've created to force Panama into like increasingly severe mistakes. But that's not really what happened. Greg Berhalter said the final ball wasn't good enough. And if you think that this should be the final ball from Shaq Moore right there, that he should just smash this ball into the box, then that makes sense. I just feel like, you know, if Berhalter were talking about the final ball of each possession wasn't good enough, he's right because it was always a bad turnover. But I don't think we were ever really getting to where we were in a good spot to hit that mythical final ball that leads to actual goals.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, to zero in on this play for a second, both Weah and Zardes were marked like tightly. So I don't know where a perfect ball would have had to go for it to result in a chance. And maybe what we need from Moore there and what we would probably get from Serginho Dest in that position is he would take the ball to the end line and try to cut it back or, you know, press the advantage and try to create something more. Moore just pumped in the cross. And I don't know, even if it had been a perfect cross, I don't know where it would have ended up and whether it would have resulted in a chance. I think not. So just agree to agree on that.
But the slick buildup was something. And I was like, all right, that was slick. I liked that a lot. We created an opening.
It's funny how much we seize on that little moment from Musa. Like that kind of moment really sticks out in a game like this and really for the national team in general. So I thought we were a touch slow from everyone right off the bat. I mentioned Areola being hesitant on that one shot. Weah tries to cross it a few moments later. I think we can, but his cross is blocked sort of. And I think we can get up to speed at this point, but then I start to see some systemic things in the way the midfield is playing, or maybe not systemic, but endemic, or definitely not pandemic, but in the 6th minute, Musa does well to settle an aerial short range pass from Acosta and then sort of takes a touch towards the middle and finds Legette's feet in the center circle. And a lot of people have highlighted this moment. I tweeted about it, but this is a point where Legette can open up with his left foot and he's got a lot of options. He's got Bello arriving to his left. He's got Weah further upfield to his left. Musa's making a pretty determined diagonal run as soon as he plays the ball to Legette to provide another option. And then of course Zardes is up front and Legette takes an extremely negative touch just with his left foot, touches back towards his own goal and then just passes it back to McKenzie. And this lack of courage, I guess I'd call it, or at least this timidity was a real problem from Legette. But I would say from Areola as well. I think even it started to affect Weah a little bit. We did not press our advantage. And, you know, these advantages are small. And like in the case of this cross from Moore that Moore hits earlier, the defense is pretty good. You know, the defense is going to be marking people. So we have to find advantages and then press them. And this is a good example of us not doing that.
Oh yeah, totally squandered. And I think when you were outlining Legette's chances, I don't even know if you said, like he also just had room to just literally just drive the ball up the field himself, the way we saw Musa do against Jamaica. Like a pass from Musa to Legette there cuts out almost all of Panama's midfield. I would even say not only did he not take the right touch and open up, like even his initial spacing, and he had time to like adjust his spacing to get the nuances right, he's crowding Musa a little bit. And if he just drifts out towards the sideline, he creates more separation between himself and these defenders. And it's these little things. He doesn't do the work early, isn't brave enough to do the work once he gets the ball. And so he just does the extremely conservative approach, which squanders this advantage. And at this point, I would totally agree. I feel like going back to the Gold Cup, like Legette has a bad case of the yips. And it's almost like, he's gotten almost like the Yules going on where it's, I mean, on this one is visible from space. Like you have to know that your job here is to advance the ball upfield.
If you're not going to do it, you can't be an eight in this system. Like he can't. We've both defended Legette a lot over the last 2 or 3 years. I feel like because I thought, you know, 2 years ago he would have taken that ball. He would have dribbled forward. He would have done something positive. And that seems like that Sebastian Legette is gone. I don't know if he's just washed or burned out or I don't know.
And we've talked about this too, going to the Gold Cup, was he has looked a lot better, or he's looked marginally better, when he isn't this guy who has to drive the game forward, when he's already set up higher in the field. I think friggin' Dingus on the Discord, for anyone who's on the Discord knows probably who I'm talking about, made the point that Legette is way more useful in a game where we are going to control the ball farther up the field, and he's just sort of one of the cogs in the rotation around the edge of the box. And maybe that's just like a luxury to even plan to have those situations against non-Jamaica teams in this campaign. But yeah, at this point, like to be the guy who needs to literally drive the game from the defensive middle third to the attacking third, Legette was not up for it yesterday. It was very Olympic qualifying ish.
Yeah. Okay.
There's not going to be a lot of, I feel like there's not going to be a lot of these events on the chronology that end with a positive spin.
No, not, I mean, nothing ends with a positive spin. We generated zero shots on target. And it's not like Panama was in a low block either. There was points in the game where they were packed in, but this was an open soccer game, I think, by and large. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and I also want to use this opening to say, you know, when we talk about CONCACAF away, there's usually a lot of talk about like fields and people talk about cow pastures, and I already think that's overblown. But Panama's field seemed fine. Like there was no issues, it seemed like, with people's touch bobbling away from them other than poor first touches. But you could basically trust the field. You could make the pass that you wanted to make and expect that it would go where it should go, and the guy on the receiving end could you know, play without having to stare the ball into his foot to make sure it didn't bobble at the last second. So there were no surface issues. Panama was moving the ball around just fine. We actually would settle it and attempt to pass. It was just so disjointed.
Seventh minute, McKenzie and Zimmerman are both weirdly high up on a throw in. They kind of get lost out to on their left sideline, just inside Panama's half, and they both get beat on a little header combination off that throw-in, which results in a pretty decent 2v2 break for Panama with both of our center backs chasing. But Acosta and Moore do well to cover it up. Eighth minute, good little spell of possession, and then a speculative cross from the right from Panama. It's covered by Turner. So, I mean, Panama's at least, I don't know if they're knocking on the door, but they're door knocking adjacent, I guess you could say.
They didn't do much. That's the thing. It's easy to, you know, think about how bad we were and just also sort of give Panama like more credit than they deserve. And I don't mean like for playing well, I just mean for being more dangerous because we were so bad. I think the same thing happened in the first half against Honduras. We started to think of, you know, everyone knows how bad that game was, or that half was. But Honduras didn't do anything particularly dangerous outside of their goal. And it was kind of the same for Panama. There wasn't a lot outside of their three corner kicks that were all of like shots on target in the game. They didn't do a lot that threatened us all that much.
I agree. I mean, they did have a couple of moments that were more dangerous than anything we put together. But
two of them were probably like Matt Turner gifts. I think he had a ball. This might be the one you're talking about where he tried to float a ball out to Bello that missed and came right back at us. And then he had another clearance.
One of them was the one that results in that really good save he makes with his on that left footed curler from, I think it was from Barcenas. All right. So, in this case, Turner's distribution is pretty bad in the ensuing buildup. But it doesn't result in much for Panama. Ninth minute, Musa gets wrecked, dribbling across Panama's half. He gets all the way, the ball comes back all the way down to our end line. I just noticed, I mean, this was a very poor giveaway. It's the kind of thing that happens early in a game and sort of sets the narrative and the way the fans think about a performance. And Musa had two bad giveaways that we'll get to the other one shortly. This one was particularly bad, but it's also true that at least it looked to me like he had five teammates who were basically doing nothing off of the ball as he's dribbling across the field. I don't know if they were thinking, okay, now our good young player from Europe is going to do something, so we'll all just stand here and watch him, or what. But anyway, that happened in the ninth minute.
No, I'll talk about this with Adams too, or I think Adams will fall in the same category when we get to him in the second half. But so you had Legette, and I would also argue Acosta being particularly like unambitious with the ball. And then what it felt like with Musa and then eventually Adams was they were trying to do way too much with the ball, almost like, oh, I'll just do it all myself. Like I'll dribble until I beat enough guys that we have a chance to do something. And he did it a couple of times and there were turnovers. I think on average, though, that equals good midfield play, the exact right amount of ambition between our midfielders. So I'm surprised a little bit that we didn't get more from it.
What do you mean on average? That means like if you average out Musa's ambition and the lack of ambition from Acosta and Legette, then that's the right amount of ambition.
That's the exact right amount of ambition for our entire midfield.
The wrong ways, perhaps. 10th minute, Moore gets beaten by Gondola and Eric Davis. Good desperation defense from Acosta to stop a Quintero shot at the top of the box after Davis whips a ball into zone 14. That's zone 14. Go ahead.
No, go on. Finish your zone 14.
Zone 14, I use that term a lot. That is the box right in front of the box. A dangerous area.
All right, yeah. The little if you picture where the arc is around the 18-yard box, that's that space. I gotta jump on Musa a little bit on this one too. This was the first thing I noticed where I was like, maybe Musa is still a little bit gassed from 3 days ago because I feel like he's actually the guy who got beat here. So our press is actually set up, and it was the same 4-3-3 press we've been running. They hit that switch. They hit the ball out to the left side, and then their left-sided sort of defender hits it out towards Shaq Moore's man, and Shaq Moore is doing it right. He arrives right as the ball does and kind of like clocks his man and was lucky not to get a yellow on the play. But Musa lost his guy, and it's Musa's guy that runs free behind him. So Musa has a lot of ground to cover as that ball moves from right to left, and he has to get there. And then he basically fell asleep as the ball got to Moore's man and allowed his midfielder to race behind him without either tracking him or grabbing his shirt or whatever to take him off of his run. So this one was actually probably on Musa for me for alertness and energy.
And I think it's worth pointing out, Eric Davis was, I don't know if he was a problem in possession so much, but that left foot of his was a problem on set pieces and just something worth noting. 11th minute, pretty sad sequence where Wea wins the ball just inside our half and drives forward a couple yards before offloading it to Musa on the sideline. And then Musa's pass to Legette in the middle is behind him. And then Legette, of course, plays it backward to Acosta, and then Acosta plays just a casual one-touch left-footed pass to Musa that is cut out. It could have been cut out by two different Panama players, and it was cut out by one of them easily, and we lose possession. And I thought it actually looked to me like everybody was not great in that sequence. Like Wea has like the whole field to dribble into, and then he just taps it to Musa on the sideline, who is sort of a little bit pinned there instead of just carrying the ball. And then Musa's pass, like I said, is not a good pass to Legette. And then Legette is, of course, unambitious as all get out. And then Acosta just kind of like dinks it to nobody. So
that's an excellent one. And I'll clip it definitely for the Discord, because even when you're making safe passes, you can still do them in this rhythm that might open something up, because you can do it really efficiently. And, you know, the ball is moving to different places on the field. And this is a great sample of really inefficient passing. Like all the passes are hit with the wrong weight. They're all the passes in the sequence are hit like a 3 or 4 feet to the wrong direction of where they should be to their teammate. And so that's the thing. Like you can have that. I still think of it, because of the origins of this Scuffed podcast, I still think of it as like the Marky Delgado rhythm passes that are like the good versions of layoffs. Like if that ball comes to Legette and he just lays it right in the, he just kills it right in the path of Acosta, where it's dead in his path, where he can run onto it and hit whatever pass he wants, that actually can have some value. That can be a good pass. When Legette pings it to Acosta and Acosta now has to like settle it first and then pick his head up, like it now hurts us. We're handcuffing each other with these passes. And that was super noticeable on this play, where it initially had so much promise of a bad Panama giveaway to Tim Wea. I'm like, oh good, we can race forward now. But instead, five poor passes later, we give it away again.
And I would say it's kind of hard to find passes in this game from the U.S. that are with the right weight to the right foot. There's just not very many of those. And I guess it's just it was just the humidity.
Are you demanding a Marky Delgado call up?
I'm not doing that.
All right.
I just think the midfield was poor. And you know, Berhalter talked about this in the press conference afterwards. He said it was not up to our expectations. The spacing, the touches, the distances between the players, and I don't know. What do you make of that? Is Berhalter scapegoating his own players there in a very subtle way, or?
Honestly, I don't think so. Berhalter's press conferences, and I'll even include his interviews with Bobby Warshaw, which I think are great content, are really kind of like illuminating for me. It's like this fascinating thing where I think Berhalter is essentially being like a very good pundit. Like if you were getting this kind of commentary at halftime of a soccer game you're watching, you'd be like, oh yeah, he's identified some real things in this soccer game that make sense to me. It'd be like if he's a guest on TSS, he'd be like, oh, this is really good stuff. He's really speaking in good detail with real specifics about this game. And he has he knows what the actual instructions are. So he actually has this other layer of the analysis, but then he's not a pundit. Like he is the head coach. He chooses the tactics. Like he's not just aware of what they are, so he's more informed. Like he's chosen them. He's chosen the players. It is his job to prepare the players to execute these things. They aren't just handed down on a tablet and he gives it to the, like, it's his job to prepare them. And I think it's really strange, or not strange, I just think it's like really interesting how he can say all these things, he can diagnose all these things, but it's like, hey man, it's your job to have fixed them ahead of time, and it's certainly your job as they're going wrong to fix them during the game.
Yeah. I guess that was basically the reaction on Twitter to that press conference, was like, good job explaining it, now fix it, you know? 12th minute, good little sequence that falls apart. A ball from Mackenzie to Zardes, dropping deep. Zardes, first time, sprays it wide to Legette. This one was a pass that was in rhythm, in ahead of him, so he could run onto it. And then he taps it to an overlapping Bello, who hits a firm pass on the ground to Areola. It's a little hot, but I think it's a receivable pass in a pocket of space at the at the corner of the box. If he plays on the half turn and turns towards the goal, this is a this is now a 3v2. Him, Zardes, and I think it's Wea attacking two Panamanian defenders, and instead his first touch just rockets into the defender back towards the sideline, and the clock keeps ticking.
I like the entry pass, though. This is where I'm like, yes, I love the entry pass from Bello into a man in the box. Like, I want more of this. It's not always going to come off. These are tight spaces. They do require a ton of technical execution. He should do better. He had a similar one last game where we found him at the top of the box and he just, trips over the ball essentially. But it's that pass is promising. It's just even when we connect that one, we're still two or three passes away with really intelligent movement from scoring the goal. So, that's like, oh, we see an inkling of what we should be doing, but it's squandered immediately. And it's 30 minutes before we get another look.
And I'm not going to pretend. I think if Pulisic receives that, he's going at the goal, Reyna as well. I'm not going to pretend that if Wea was the one receiving, there's a possibility Wea could take a poor touch there. There's a possibility anybody could take a poor touch there. So it's not like, I don't know. It's not totally binary for me, but Areola, we have enough sample size on Areola to know, that we don't want him being the one receiving that pass in that spot in that moment. 13th minute, another Musa giveaway. He's getting a little cute, sort of steps on the ball and tries to push it past the guy. And then Quintero takes it away from him. Quintero was very active. And, I thought probably Panama's best player on the night. And Musa fouls him quickly. 14th minute, which is, I think, is good. You know, if you give the ball away, you should foul the guy quickly. 14th minute, big chance for Panama. Murillo to Martinez to Quintero. They just slice through our left side. And then Quintero switches it to Gondola, who squares up more and whips in a ball that Blackburn doesn't get a touch to. Moore got a foot to the cross, I think, pretty clearly on the replay, and puts the trajectory off a little. But it bounced in the six right in front of Blackburn, who was between McKenzie and Zimmerman. So Panama gets zero XG for this, but it was probably the most dangerous moment of the game outside of the sort of zone goal.
Yeah, for sure. It puts McKenzie in a tough spot, because if he tries to make a play on that, it could have been his name on the own goal sheet. So, you know, it's one of those where it's like, man, I don't know if there's much that we can do there other than, you know, control more of the game so we can overcome some of these chances that we concede to Panama.
Yeah, I mean, Shaq Moore can close Gondola down a little bit more, I guess. But yeah, that was scary. And then in the 18th minute, we get another decent Panama chance off of a throw-in. Earlier, Musa gets bossed by Quintero. So Quintero takes the ball off of Musa, and it ends up with Gondola 1v1 with Moore again. And he takes it to the end line this time and gets a good cross off, and Zimmerman sends it out of bounds for a throw-in. On the ensuing throw-in, Gondola throws it in for Martinez with everyone kind of napping down at the end line. And Martinez loops one across the six for Quintero, who touches it past Legette, who is just kind of doing like a slow motion pirouette in the air as he
don't jump. Defenders at home, don't jump to block shots. It's like basketball. Like, that's the first rule of basketball.
Like, maybe just like watching a butterfly. And Quintero's touch is a little heavy, but if it's a good touch there, he's settled with the ball 7 yards from goal and nobody near him. Anyway, his touch isn't good enough, and it bounces to McKenzie, who clears it, I believe. Yeah.
That's a good point. I wonder if that went down as a shot too. Because between that, the one that McKenzie elected not to play to avoid the own goal, and then this Matt Turner save that I'm sure we'll get to that probably didn't count for offside, like we probably got a little bit of XG saving grace here with some of these near chances.
Big discount on Panamanian XG. As Acosta set pieces, which I had been excited to see, were kind of not great. I know you're going to kind of disagree with me on this. You thought they were fine.
Well, I thought they were intentional. The first few, and again, no one's going to be perfect for set piece delivery. Like, no one hits them exactly where they want to every time. But I thought Acosta hit Zimmerman's head a few times, and that seemed intentional to me in the first half. And it sucks that we only have one real target on set pieces. Zardes probably is another guy, so two guys. But based on the design, it looked like we were trying to hit it to Zimmerman's head, and then Zardes and Areola both were like pinching around that towards either post to like frame the goal, so that wherever Zimmerman could put the ball on the second ball, they would be there to try to sweep home. But you know, those it's still always very low percentage. Zimmerman did his best, but I thought Acosta was fine early. I think as the game went on, the set piece delivery got, you know, worse or just variance kicking.
Yeah, there was the one in the second half where he puts it right in the six, and Zimmerman thought he was. I think Zimmerman was pulled back by Godoy on that one. That was, I thought, the best set piece from Acosta on the night. I thought there were a couple of those corner kicks early from Acosta where he hit it like, I don't know, 30 yards in the air. And I was like, what are we doing?
Yeah, one of those in the first half, I think was intentional, because when I'm watching it, Zimmerman doesn't run at the goal as Acosta's taking his run up. Like, he starts and then he actually fades far out toward like 16, 17 yards out from the end line and is moving away towards the opposite sideline in anticipation of Acosta hitting it over everybody. And then Zimmerman's job is to head it back across the field and hope to create danger on that one. So that one, again, I think it's intentional. Maybe it wasn't supposed to go out of the screen up in the air, but I think he was trying to overhit the cluster of bodies to Zimmerman.
Okay.
I'm not defending every set piece. I'm just saying, like, he had a few good ones. And again, no one hits perfect set pieces for an entire game. Do they?
Yeah.
Very few.
I don't know. Hakim Ziyech, maybe. I do think we have to we should probably hope to be more dangerous on set pieces than we were in this game, especially given how difficult it appears it's going to be for us to generate chances on the road, or, you know, sometimes at home as well. So,
well, part of that is going to be adding Weston McKennie, who's a set piece cheat code. Part of that, Miles Robinson, who's excellent on set pieces. I think he has 3 goals for the U.S. in his limited caps, and some big ones. So I think, you know, I think that we can get better with more targets. I do agree that, you know, hopefully we do get consistent service from whoever's taking the kicks Wednesday, because it's hard to imagine that our open play chances are going to be like immensely better than they were.
Yeah, maybe we can get an early goal and then really open it up. I don't know. I can't help but be a little bit optimistic. 24th minute, Musa steps by a guy nicely. I think it was Martinez, and sprays it to Legette, who hits a cross for Areola. I think it's a decent ball from Legette. Areola claims to have been fouled, but regardless, he didn't get to it, and there was no whistle. So, you know, really grasping at straws here in the 24th minute, just static from the midfield, and Zimmerman ends up hitting a diagonal in Weah's direction. That's pretty poor. It kind of felt a little hopeless at that point in terms of generating chances. 27th and 28th minute, we get double Olympico attempts from Panama, one from Eric Davis and one from Barcenas. Turner's able to keep them just out, but there's a little bit of a foreshadowing there. You gave me a knowing and exhausted look.
You know, it's, I don't know if we'd scouted Panama set pieces. I had not scouted Panama set pieces. But it's like you're saying, if we hadn't scouted them going into the game, by halftime, we should have had a good sense of what they were trying to do. They were loading the guys around Matt Turner, 4 bodies around Turner, and firing it in at goal. So we had to know that that was in the works. Yeah.
And then Sam Staiskal asked a question about zonal marking on set pieces in the press conference. That's the Athletic reporter. And Berhalter said, Sam, that's a really difficult question. We're going to have to go back 2 years and look at all the set pieces and like how we do it. So, you know, go and look at some data and then come back to me with a more detailed question. So which I think maybe there's some, there may be a fair response in some ways, but, it's interesting that was brought up, I thought.
Yeah, and I guess in Berhalter's defense here, I think that's fair if the question is, you know, why have you struggled defending set pieces? Is that roughly what the question was? I think that's how I saw it framed on Twitter.
I think it was that explicitly. It was just like, tell me your thought process on defending set pieces, more or less. Are you going to stick with zone marking or something? Yeah, I'm not criticizing for his response, really.
But I would be interested to hear just his and his staff's approach. I keep laughing when I think about a staff because I keep remembering Anthony Hudson is on it. So all of these different tactical questions, and I'm like, I'm sure the brain trust will get together and come up with some good solutions about verticality going into the next game. I'm genuinely curious how they will approach or what their approach was. What was the discussion after seeing the first half corner kicks from Panama? And because I'm, you know, that you talk about that stuff at halftime, like you go through all that. That's your opportunity to really diagram and come up with how you want to approach it for the second half. Like, I'm really curious what the discussion was. You know, I understand the logic behind leaving the space from the goal line to 3 or 4 yards out as Turner's space and saying, Matt Turner, you control this. Matt Turner's actually good at controlling that space. So I'm just curious if there was any sort of discussion or adjustments, or if they just felt like we're good and it just took a desperately unlucky, if we want to call it that, Giazzi Zardes action to sort of give Panama the lead. I mean, goals happen on corners, so we'll talk about it when we get to it.
Yeah.
But I am curious about the discussion after these Olympico attempts we saw in the first half, and not just Olympico attempts, but how Panama set up with them by crowding Matt Turner inside of our zonal marking system. What the staff's thoughts were on defending that for the second half.
Yeah, it would be interesting. So the 35th minute, a promising little bit of possession from the U.S. Legette intercepts it and around midfield, and then it goes Areola to Acosta, who plays through the lines to Zardes, who then sprays it wide to Legette down the wing. And this is a, you know, this is a moment where you got to press your advantage, just not to beat a dead horse. But instead of pressing our advantage, Legette takes a, you know, a static touch and then plays it backward to Acosta and close to the center circle. Acosta's first touch is brutal. It just spins up on him and he gets wrecked by Martinez. And then Quintero is driving forward and slips it wide to Gondola in the box. I don't know that I saw the replay, but this was a close offside call. And he got a shot off. Turner kept it out with his right paw. But I don't think it shows it. Like we talked about earlier, I don't think it shows up on XG because it was called offside. Another moment of danger.
Yeah. But on the tape, we get another brilliant Matt Turner play. And again, this is like brilliant, like the micro footwork adjustments as the guy's bearing in on him to change his positioning, to limit the angles. And then the discipline to stay big and to not go down, not go to ground, not to lean one way or the other. And then the reaction to actually get the hand to the ball. Just really fun to watch Matt Turner play.
He's really good at stopping shots, man. 36th minute, nice little bit of work from Legette to find an entry pass to Areola. So he does this thing where he looks off the guy to his right. I think it was Moore maybe, and then finds the pass to Areola and he turns and drives and plays a pass to Jazzy, but Jazzy's offside just barely. I guess he could have left it for Wea, who was running in behind from the left. But I think at this point it's worth pointing out, Wea didn't touch the ball in a remotely dangerous spot. I don't think maybe all game, did he?
I can think of.
There were a couple times, you know, like where he was able to pump a cross in or something. But man, it's really unfortunate to use up 70 minutes of Tim Wea just to do like nothing in the attack. And not really because it was his fault, I don't think. I give the same analysis to Zardes too. I thought Zardes, when he came back to the ball, he was fine. But he didn't get any sort of service or any sort of connection from the midfield. So.
No. And like we're saying, I don't love the approach where Bello and Moore just try to whip the ball in as soon as they get it out wide in an advanced position. But even on those, Zardes never had a chance to even make plays on them because they were always deflected or blocked and never got to him. So, no, it's tough. I know there were people who were saying Pepe's the hot hand, et cetera, like, but I think if you flip Pepe with Zardes in starting 11, I think it sure feels like Pepe is going to be exactly as invisible in this game. I don't know how you'd like watching back through it, like be like, oh, but if that was Ricardo Pepe in there, that horrible play from Legette and Acosta would have come off. Like there was just no nothing for anyone in the front three to really work with that
Zardes
much.
Was not the problem. I mean, you know, when Pepe came on, there was a little bit of freshness and a little bit of pep, I thought, for like a minute or two. But maybe I'm stretching with that. 39th minute, Quintero to Barcenas in the Man City zone. And his cross is wide of the goal. Again, I thought Quintero had a great game, and he was really feeling it in this moment, sort of the no-look inside of the boot pass into the end line for Barcenas. 42nd minute, we get a good sequence where Zimmerman wins the ball from Quintero, and Acosta plays a pass to Zardes' feet in the center circle, and then he plays it wide to Musa, who plays Bello down the wing. But Bello's cross is not good enough. And, you know, as we've discussed earlier, maybe he should be doing something besides whipping a cross in from, you know, 20 yards from the touchline or whatever it was.
Well, and I'm happy to go case by case here. So first off, the Musa, this was like the good Musa ambition, right? He had to like change his angle a little bit by doing a cool Musa dribble away from his man and then hit that nice outside of the foot past Bello to spring him. And actually, Bello does have Zardes here. Looking at the replay, like Zardes has gained a position almost to the point that he's probably offside, actually, and the flag may have gone up if that ball does get to him. But like it was like at that point, if Bello's seeing it, he probably should hit this early ball in because Zardes has control of the space, and any ball in between Zardes and the goal is Zardes's ball. So I will be like, okay, that one was there. You know, they're not always hopeful. That one was there, but the cross wasn't hit properly to beat the first defender.
I don't know if he beat the first defender all night with his crossing. Maybe he only had three or four crosses, so it's not like a huge sample size. 45th minute, we get some more poor distribution from Turner. I mean, it is the knock on him. And I think it's a left-footed ball into what would be our right channel. And the ball works its way over to Barcenas on the right side of on our left side. Whoa, very confusing. And then Barcenas takes a touch in and then hits a curler that I think was on frame. And it's another big save from Turner with his right arm, I believe, right?
Yep. And so this was one where it shows where you need to hit a shot to beat him, because this is a good curling shot. It's not quite top bins. And what you see is that to beat him there, it had to be like exactly off the post and in, because Turner had the rest of the goal covered.
And so halftime comes and goes. I was feeling like a 0-0 draw would be a fine result for us in this game at that point, given how we had performed. Adams comes on for Musa. Acosta moves up to the eight. Adams at the six. And then Aronson comes on for Areola at the half. So two halftime subs. That's a little unusual for Berhalter.
Yeah, it is. I'll say here, you know, you're saying you would take a 0-0 draw here based on what we saw at the half. And where I'm going to push back on this is, like, this wasn't our first team, right? We rotated seven guys from what was our very strong 11 for the opening game. What I'm thinking is that was really ugly, but these were our backups. We got to halftime 0-0. There was plenty of room to improve, but this is where we are now. And now we have really good players on the bench we can bring in. And we can still take this game. We can still take 3 points from this game because Panama didn't capitalize on the chances we gave them. And here we are, right? Like, we can improve. Panama doesn't have guys they're going to bring into this game to make them a lot better. And we have a full bench of, or at least five or six guys on the bench who can really make us better. So I was actually like, this is still there for the taking, as ugly as it's been so far.
Who were you thinking about as coming in off the bench and making us better?
So I was actually thinking that Tyler Adams would make us better because Acosta hadn't been great, but we can bring in Adams and solve that. I was thinking that Serginho Dest makes us a lot better. And if you want end product, if you want soccer to be played in the attacking third, Serginho Dest will go into the attacking third and play soccer. And then obviously Brendan Aronson makes us better. So I thought we had three guys that we could easily switch: Adams for Acosta, Aronson for Areola, and Dest for Shaq Moore. And we get better at attacking.
And you got,
ironically, I got one and a half. I'm going to say we got one and a half of those subs.
What do you mean? Because I was going to say you got two out of three. What do you mean you got one and a half?
Well, because we didn't get Adams for Acosta. We got Adams for Yunus Musa, and Acosta went up to the eight. So we basically just took what was a really poor performance from Acosta at the six, which is, I think, it's his better position for the national team. I don't love him as an eight. And we just took that poor performance and we just shifted it upfield by 15 yards. I'm like, okay, we'll just be much worse. We'll have this bad performance right here next to Sebastian Legette, who has also been performing poorly. Yeah.
What do you think about the whole argument? Well, Musa had to come off so that he could play on Wednesday. I have some sympathy for that, I'll have to say.
I do too. I just think if that's going to be the case, then that's got to be a different sub. Like, you either you have to address the Acosta issue with instructions for how he needs to play. Like, because you can do that too. You can improve players from one half to the other with, you know, instructions, with halftime either adjustments or literally just explicitly saying, hey, you're doing this, this, and this, and it's not helping us win at all. We need you to start doing X, Y, and Z, which will help us win because you're capable of it. You are not worse than the players that Panama have on the field. You're either just as good or better. And we definitely didn't see that, you know, like, none of those adjustments happened. And even introducing two Champions League players at halftime, as we'll see, didn't lead to us being any more dangerous or really even being keeping Panama from being dangerous.
Yeah. I would have liked to see De La Torre on for Legette. I mean, there may be something going on in training that shows Berhalter unequivocally that LDLT is not ready for this. But, you know, based on what we've seen, the tape that I've watched from the Netherlands and, you know, even his little cameo the other day, it seems like he's ready. And it seems like we could have used somebody like him, who is pretty good on the half turn, pretty technical, pretty tidy, not a complete liability defensively, certainly not much worse than Legette, if worse at all. And we instead we get 45 more minutes of Sebastian Legette.
Yeah, so I totally agree mostly in that I think you're totally right that Luca De La Torre could have come on for either Acosta or Legette. So I'm saying once Tyler Adams is your six at halftime, then you've got Acosta and Legette as your eights. I think you could have also brought De La Torre on and dropped one of the eights, especially if you're saying Yunus Musah has to come off for like minutes restrictions. I don't even think you have to do that right away. Like I said, I do think that you should be able to get good effect or improved effect out of your eights just by, you know, the halftime intervention as a coach. You should be able to improve that. You should identify what's going wrong, the yips that Legette has, and like almost like force him through that in the field. Once we didn't do that, and again, you are Luca De La Torre is an unknown, right? We don't know for sure how we would do in this scenario. I also hope that he would do it, but it'd be a bit of a bigger dice roll right away. Once we go down 1-0 and there has not been any improvement from Acosta or Legette, like at that point, then it's a no-brainer. And even if Luca De La Torre struggles, like he's there with this skill set. This is what he offers. You know that this is his plus. If he's going to bring anything, this is it. This is where you do have to roll the dice because you're losing. You need to get that goal. And the guys you have on there are not working. So while I'm okay with going more conservative at halftime with those subs and not bringing Luca on right away, to finish the game out with Acosta and Legette as your eights performing the way they performed is just like, it makes zero sense.
And then we brought on, we'll get to it shortly, but we brought on Roldan for Weah. All right, back to the timeline. 46.
Yeah, we'll get to those subs in a bit.
46 minute. I thought Adams immediately brought something. He wins the ball at midfield after like two separate challenges to get the ball, and then he hits it wide to Weah. Weah's first touch is a little negative, and he hits a hopeful cross, and it gets nicked and kind of hurdles over Zardes in the box. 51st minute. Don't worry, those of you who are tired of thinking about this game, it's not that much more of a timeline. 51st minute, Bello heads across back to the top of the box for Barcenas to have a volley, and he's rescued by Legette. So it's not like Legette did nothing useful in this game. I'm not trying to overstate it, but the problem I have with Bello is he just doesn't inspire confidence as the left back. It feels a little scary back there with him.
Yeah. And my thing with Bello is like, you know, obviously it's scuffed. We are not like, we got to worry about the mistakes of the youth. Like our youth are a lot of our best players. George Bello does make mistakes that are like, in my mind, entirely attributable to youth. Like this header is just like, hey buddy, what are you doing here? Like this needs to have been weeded out of your game to not have a clearance header. Like late. That was an excellent attacking header. Like that's what a great Olivier Giroud player would do right there, is to just knob that ball down into a really dangerous area at the top of the box for one of your teammates to run onto and smash it. And he had a couple other ones where that just like there, you see them so rarely because, you know, professional players have kind of stopped doing those things. He had like throw-ins going over his head that he just misjudged in the air. And I'm just like, come on, George, like just be a professional player for a little bit. Like we got to get more out of you here. And if he can't, then again, he's just not ready. And no amount of familiarity with Berhalter can overcome the mistakes he's making.
And again, I'm not saying he's the reason we lost this game. I don't think he really is. I mean, I don't think it helps to have him over there in like sort of the general game state and like the rhythm building that we need. But, you know, he had that nice pass to Areola. He has a nice pass coming up in the timeline here. So, you know, he's capable of some good stuff, but the service wasn't good enough. The defending is, it's a little messy back there.
Little naive. I'm going to call it naive defending. That's going to be my Bello defense description.
Naiveness resulting in messiness. How about that?
It leads to some mess. And when we have Miles Robinson and again, Walker Zimmerman cleaned up some messes, we can get
Chris,
by.
And well, we can get into the Chris Richards, Mark McKenzie debate too. But 52nd minute, a good spell of possession from back to middle third. It gets to Moore on the right wing, and he just passes it back to Adams for sort of another hopeful cross. And Adams had two of those where he didn't beat the first or second defender with a ball from pretty deep, aimed like just sort of trying to loft it in the box and doesn't even get it above head high. 53rd minute, Adams ball to Moore from deep, you know, way up the sideline, and Moore takes a really nice first touch cutting in with the ball, and then his second touch is like, you know, 15 yards ahead of him, and he gets wrecked, giveaway, just sloppy. And a few moments later, we concede a corner in the 54th minute as Panama goes left to right. They attack that Man City zone on behind Bello. Adams does well to cover it, to cover the trailing runner, but he pokes it over the end line for a corner. It's kind of not the touch I think he wanted there. And then the aforementioned Eric Davis takes a corner kick and just whips it right into the corridor of uncertainty. Annibal Godoy maybe got a touch. I don't even know if he got a touch, but he maybe got a touch. And then Zardes definitely gets the finishing touch. Kind of a frown from the gods of variance, but it was, you know, it was deserved for Panama. I mean, if you look at the XG numbers, I think it was 0.88 to 0.22. They did enough to piece together a goal's worth of attacking danger. Even though XG doesn't count the times when you don't get a shot off, which can often be even more dangerous. So there it is, 1-0 Panama.
I mean, I don't have much for it. Again, like we can talk about the set piece stuff. You look how we're set up, and with the way that Panama have been doing this, we do have a guy closest to the ball. So Sebastian Legette is the guy closest to the post, and he sort of, I'm not putting this on Legette, he's not tall enough to go get this ball, right? But the ball's hit just over his left shoulder, just between him and the goal. And so it goes back to, like, if you can't get it, you don't have to, but disrupt the other guy. So just get your body to Godoy and like lean on him, put a hip on him, you know, like just don't let him have a free header. And we're still talking about degrees of variance here, where I don't even know if his header was going to go on frame, if he was just going to flick it over his head or what. But so the fact that it goes off of him and then off of Zardes and then in, nothing Legette can do about that. But just going back to like general set piece defense, just disrupt guy. Like, don't just stand there and watch the ball go a foot and a half over your head. Like, well, nothing I can do, so I can't impact this play. Like, find a way to impact the play. Find a way to protect the goal somehow.
Yeah. Legette just seems tired, man. He seems like a tired man. 57th minute. Stevens comes on for Gondola. For Panama, and then 61st minute, we get a really nice ball from George Bello to Brendan Aaronson down the left wing. It just beats Murillo, and then a good set piece from Acosta, and then Zimmerman thinks he's pulled down in the six. I think maybe he was by Godoy, but didn't get that call. So there you go.
I'm just laughing about these being like our best moments. I mean, there was a little contact in the box. This was when we were really getting dangerous.
Yeah. Some little bits of attack from the US in the ensuing minutes, but nowhere near enough cutting edge in the final third to trouble Panama. Two more crosses, Bello dribbling into a wall at the top of the box. We get 68th minute. We get Pepe for Zardes, Yedlin for Moore, and Roldan for Wea. Why Roldan? I mean, Roldan looked completely out of his depth out there.
Why any of them? I'm sorry. Pepe makes sense, right? Switching your strikers out, especially if you really think Pepe is your number one striker, which I think Berhalter probably believes at the moment. That makes sense. Like, you're improving at striker. Roldan for Wea and Yedlin for Moore, for me, was like, oh, these are exactly the subs you would make if you're trying to kill off a 1-0 game when you're winning. They don't make any sense to me as a subs you make down 0-1. Moore wasn't doing anything particularly egregious. So you're not adding to your attack, I don't think, by going from Yedlin to Moore. I don't think he had to come off, like, fatigue-wise. So at the worst, leave him on there until he absolutely has to, if he's cramping up or whatever, and keep that sub available in case you need to make it elsewhere. I mean, we saw Zimmerman by the end of the game is limping. So I don't have a problem being aggressive and using your subs early and like risking that if you have an injury, you got to play with 10 men. But I do have a problem if one of those subs that you're using is just a straight like for like that's not required. Like that sub actually bothers me more than Roldan for Weah, even though I absolutely hate Roldan coming in for Tim Weah.
Yeah, it's a good point. We really needed some better midfield play. We needed our eights to be better. That was the biggest problem, I thought.
This for me is absolutely where where one of the subs has to be De La Torre on for one of the eights, whether it's Legette or Acosta. I don't really care, but you have to improve the play you're getting from the eights. And Luca De La Torre might not actually do that, but again, his skill set, the reason you have him on this team is because he can do those things. He's a rhythm passer. He drives the ball. He finds feet as pressure advances. Like, this is what he's there for. Whether he can do it at a high enough level or not, I don't know. And no one else really does either. So anyone who's saying he definitely would have done it is being pretty speculative. But as the coach, you still have to roll that dice because you're losing 1-0. And running the super ineffective eights that you're running out there are not going to win you a game or get you your point back.
How many players would you cut from the next roster based on this game?
I honestly don't know. I'm not sure. I haven't gamed it out yet, so I don't want to say.
All right. So, those are the subs, and then Panama makes some subs too. Eduardo Guerrero for Blackburn, and then Armando Cooper for Godoy, and then we get that. The last item I have on the timeline is a 70th minute chance for Pepe. Acosta uses his back to win a little aerial challenge, and it falls kindly for Pepe just inside the box, and he takes a shot from a tight angle. Basically, all of our XG comes from this one chance. It's,
I think that's about right. Either this or Zimmerman's header in the first half off Acosta corner. And I think that this is telling because we've kind of made light of the fact that Berhalter calls his subs solutions. And the fact that we're down 1-0 in a World Cup qualifying game and your last item on the timeline is in the 70th minute, like there weren't any solutions coming in this game. And I think that's why we can say, I don't care how much time Panama are wasting. I don't care what kind of dogs are running on the field. Like this is a disaster of very much of our own making. And I do kind of wish a couple of events had been on here, and those were the ones where it looked like our instructions were wherever we received the ball, kick the ball as hard towards the goal as you possibly can. I think Roldan had one from just outside of Matt Turner's box. It just blows my mind, and it's just like, what is the plan here? What are the instructions? Because I think Berhalter said the plan was to have the center backs and the center mids cut out their forwards. And again, I think it's telling because Panama were defending in a lot like a 4-4-2. This is what I feel like is like we have that demeanor of a team that has just begun working on possession play. And it wouldn't surprise me if the plan is to use our center backs and center mids to beat their forwards. But what's the next thing that needs to happen? What's the third thing that happens after that? What are the five options that we're going to have once we get into the next space? And we just don't seem to have any kind of a plan against a team that is in any way remotely organized. And that is, it's pretty troubling. This is very troubling. The lack of a plan is troubling. And then some of the player selections, again, I feel like crossover into active harm. Like the manager at that point is actively harming our chances to win. A lot of the players harmed our chances to win too. And it's part of the manager's job to identify what that is and then make adjustments. And he had certain adjustments available to him that he wasn't interested in trying. And this is like, okay, how is Greg Berhalter helping us win soccer games? I'm asking you, Bells. I actually want you to give me an answer.
I don't know. But I mean, I'll go back to the old standby, which is he convinced Serginho Dest and Yunus Musa to play for us. And those players, honestly, after watching last night, the quality of those two players, even though Musa had, you know, he had his warts last night for sure. He didn't have his best game. The quality that those two players offer is especially seems even more valuable this morning than it did yesterday morning because of the gap, the gaps between our first choice and maybe our second choice, even 11s, at least, you know, with the rosters that Berhalter has been calling up. I don't know, man. I don't know what he's doing to help us be better and help us win soccer games. We haven't seen, I mean, we saw like a pretty good performance against Jamaica, but you were careful to caveat that. And if you look at it, you know, we've got our two wins in qualifying against the two worst teams in the standings right now, Honduras and Jamaica. Against anybody above that bottom two, we're either drawing at home or drawing on the road or losing. So
it's a tough spot to be in. I still feel pretty good about our chances to qualify, in part because so many other results are still breaking our way. So, you know, we talk about how much margin there is for error in qualifying in CONCACAF, and there is. We squandered a ton of it last cycle to manage to play our way out of the Russia World Cup. We squandered a little bit in the first window, but thankfully, like, the teams around us squandered it right next to us, so we actually emerged from it with basically the same amount of margin for error. And now we've kind of thrown a little bit more away. So I still think we're okay. We still have a top three talent pool in the region. I don't even think you can argue that. So we're still in a good spot talent wise. But just throwing these points away, and again, denying Panama 2 points by getting a goal back and getting a draw would have been massive. So that's a 3 point swing, even though we only would have gotten 1 point. It's all about denying points to the other teams racing us for that third place spot.
And I mean, this was a winnable game, it was a drawable game, but it was also a winnable game. Panama was not that good. We were just bad.
I do think people aren't exaggerating when they say that this was like in the pantheon of like the worst performances for the US. 0.22 XG with not a lot of like, oh, but we had this moment that didn't quite result in this shot. Like, there weren't even any of those where you can try to game the single game XG.
I mean, I pick through the game looking for moments of promise. I've given you the best I could.
I do wish the chronology would have included some of the antics. I think the antics were notable. We had civilians running onto the field, which I thought was great. Like, there were some high fives involved. The Panama players were all about it. There were a lot of injuries, a lot of good time wasting for Panama requiring stretchers. I feel like anybody who's going to get subbed at that point knows. And so is like, get as far away from the sideline as you can, go down, wait for the stretcher, take all of these things. Like, I appreciate and say that if you don't want underdog teams to do these things against you, you should just be winning the soccer game.
Yeah, and in Panama, as we've mentioned, there was no need to do any of that. It was not, the game wasn't going to go against them. They were just getting reps. They were just working through the motions, you know, getting reps for when it really is necessary.
Do anything else you want to talk about for this game?
Yeah.
It's so bad.
I just want to reemphasize that my big thing is this unwillingness to press the numerical advantage. So, I mean, is it Berhalter's fault that Sebastian Legette is scared to play forward? Or at least was in the first. I thought he was maybe a little better in the second half, marginally better in that respect, Legette was. But, you know, is that timidity and the lack of quality Berhalter's fault? It's Berhalter's fault for putting them on the field, but I don't know.
That's where we get to is even if it's not, even in the best case that it's not, if it's not being adjusted, if it's not changing on the field, again, you're not bound to keep the player out there. Like, it's your job to replace him with someone who will actively try to win you the soccer game, which I'm in favor of the guys who will play, who will do that.
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to talk about roster cuts. I mean, maybe the cut we need to do is in the coaching position, but it's just not going to happen. It's like pointless to talk about it. Berhalter's not going to get fired. Unless, say, maybe we lose to Costa Rica on Wednesday and then it slides into.
Oh, it could happen at that point. It could for sure happen. I genuinely think it could happen if we lose to Costa Rica at home.
And we totally could. Yeah, sorry, no, that's all. I mean, according to who could it happen? You know, is Cindy Cohn going to do it, or like who's going to fire him?
You saying Ernie just won't fire him? It's Ernie's project as much as it's Berhalter's. They're one and the same.
I think he's going to be very reluctant to do it, especially if we're, you know, even if we lose against Costa Rica, we're still going to be like probably in the top half of the table. So it's, he can very easily argue, yeah, things aren't going perfectly well, but this is a young team. We're very much in position to qualify for the World Cup. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying.
I guess I'll just say, and I think I might have said this after the first window too. I basically don't think at this point any weight needs to be given to like the long-term project that Berhalter was hired to ostensibly like be achieving, because there's just no evidence that anything that we see on the soccer field is a result of like what has been built. Like there hasn't been anything built.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like there's no like, we have a foundation of doing this. And so now you can see this and this are almost there, but not quite coming off. Like yesterday was just more of the same of like, there is nothing going on here. We don't lose any groundwork. There isn't going to be any, the new coach coming in won't be like starting for like having to start. Oh, like we're already starting over every single time we take the field. Which again is fine. We talked about this too. Like it just means that we have to approach games and be like, oh, I wonder if, just like we do with players, like, oh, I wonder if our coach will like make some egregious mistakes this game. And if he does, will we be able to overcome them? Just like we do when we watch any of our 22-year-olds take the field.
Man. Okay. Well, I do still think it's, yeah, I think the case you're making for Berhalter being superfluous is very strong. I still don't think it's likely to result in his firing, even if we lose to Costa Rica on Wednesday. I'd be really surprised. Maybe the player, you know, there's some rumors about the players being really upset last night, you know, flipping around on the internet. But I'm just, you know, of course there's probably an unhappy locker room last night. Of course. Why would there not be? We want it to be an unhappy locker room. But, you know, the only way I could see it really, like Berhalter really getting fired, is if the players joined together and went to Ernie Stewart and said, like, look, enough's enough. We need a new coach.
I know. I have wanted Patrice Evra to be on the national team for a while. I was laughing when you said that because it made me think of like when Yedlin was subbing in. Actually, I thought of this yesterday when Yedlin was going into that 1-0 game. What was running through my head was, and I think about this probably once a month, Daniel De Rossi for Italy in their World Cup playoff to Sweden when they need a goal to win and the coach is subbing him in instead of like their best forward who's on the bench for some reason. And De Rossi is like wildly gesturing down the bench and be like, put the forward in, like I don't go into this game. And he's being like super Italian about it. And like, I was just wondering if Yedlin was like, hold on, coach, did you call my number? Because we got a lot of guys over here that can score goals and add to goal scoring. And you want me to go? All right, I'll go.
Matthew Hoppe, Matthew Wrecking Ball Hoppe, just throw him in the game and see what happens at that point, you know? I do think we got Legette needs to not see the field for a while after that performance last night. Roldan, go ahead.
Or, again, for some of these guys, it's like, there might just be super narrow roles where they can go in. And Sebastian Legette being like the guy to drive our offense forward from midfield, it's like he can't be that. He cannot be the linchpin of our midfield. His job is to like disappear in around a bunch of really good players. Like we can't just give the keys to him. It won't work.
And I mean, Roldan looks even more out of his depth. Areola can have a narrow role, I guess, to use your language, but his role should not be starter in two straight games in qualifying. And I did think Bello looked out of his depth, and we need to call up Joe Scally. Again, is Joe Scally going to solve everything? Probably not, but we need to find some solutions. And then I didn't think McKenzie was horrible last night, but he also wasn't great. And I think we'd be much more solid back there with Chris Richards than him. And definitely, you know, we all know Miles Robinson's going to be more solid than McKenzie. So, yeah. And I don't have much problem with how Zardes played. So Berhalter out, Greg, huh? Is that where you are?
I don't think we would notice. I don't think we would notice at all. That's I guess like it might get better, but I just don't envision a way that like any of the coaches that we would hire would somehow do worse. Like I just don't see how you would actually do worse.
I think it's tilting at windmills to say that to ask for him to be fired right now, but you know, I guess keep the candle burning is what I'd say. Anything else, Greg?
Just that despite like the total ineptitude on display yesterday, it won't surprise me at all if we go out to, if we in the Costa Rica home game win like 2 or 3-0. And this still goes back to like last cycle where we were dreadful at times and then we smashed Honduras 6-0 and we won the Summer Gold Cup in 2017 and we smashed Panama 4-0. Like we have that in us at home and we have good players. It's just like we have to have some semblance of what we're trying to do in the games where we aren't smashing bad teams 4-0 and 5-0.
Like you said earlier, it's a team with any of the slightest semblance of organization. We need to show that we can actually play a soccer game against that. Check out our Patreon, links in the show notes. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you.